Greetings, greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. Yes, it is the Weekly Worldview. We're back. I am your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back to the show where we don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus you on the events of the week through the lens of original thought, joined in studio, as always, by my extremely attractive audio engineer. Ready to go. Ready to plow forward into the broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, I must confess at the top, there's only one reason that I am able to be here with you tonight, and that is pharmaceuticals. Not to put too fine a point on it, but I have been struggling with some sort of infection or irritation or inflammation in the adenoids, tonsils, an invasion of heat and wind or something like that. Not sure what's going on, but I don't feel sick otherwise, but my tonsils. I'm on a finely balanced dose of vitamin C, Advil, and amoxicillin right now at this moment as we speak. Hopefully that will not affect the quality of the broadcast, but I hope you understand if it does. Because anyway, if the pipes hold out, we will do the whole thing. I'm all over it. And I want to thank the makers of amoxicillin, whoever that is. I actually went and got a preemptive dose. The doctor thought I was weird, maybe like one of those weird people who always goes to the urgent care for every little thing. And I said, that's not me, doc. I said, I don't even have a primary care doctor. I don't even have one. I only came here because I have an important week coming up in my work, and I feel something coming on. And I'm scared that I'm going to get sick. But I never go to the urgent care. Last time I went to the urgent care was because my face was split open down the middle and blood was squirting out. That's typically what it takes. So she looked at me a little weird and she said, well, I can write you a prescription for amoxicillin, but your strep test is negative. I just gave her the two thumbs up. I said, give me the drugs, doc. Give me the drugs. Let me get out of here. And so I made it in, and I'm glad I did. I want to start, as a matter of fact, in the science and health file with a story from the Telegraph over in London reporting that gluten-free diets could be damaging to the health of people who do not have celiac disease.
No.
Which is most people, by the way. They don't have it. Anyway, writing in the Journal of Pediatrics, Dr. Norell Riley of Columbia University Medical Center up there in New York City warned that gluten-free alternatives are often loaded with fat and sugar and lack nutrients. She went on to say that there's just no evidence that processed gluten-free foods are healthier, and there are no data to support the theory of intrinsically toxic properties of gluten in otherwise healthy adults and children. So there you have it. Oh, she goes on. I could go on, but I'm not going to go too far. By the way, there was a survey in Britain, where they report that one household in 10 contains someone who believes that gluten is bad for them. That's 10% of the population, for those of you who matriculated in the government schools. And I had thought it seemed odd that a staple of the human diet for 5,000 years is suddenly toxic. But anyway, I'm not a scientist. I'm not a doctor. I'm just telling you what the report is, that's all. And if you're eating gluten-free food, I'm happy for you. I hope you enjoy it. I hope it's delicious and delectable and delightful. And I hope you enjoy it. Now let's move on, though, into the economics file, where we're going to report on our good friends in the Occupy and Black Lives Matter movement, who have coalesced around the idea of a $15 minimum wage, and they are working and marching and fighting, marching in the streets for a $15 minimum wage. And we've got a report from the UK Business Insider. A new restaurant called Eatsa is almost fully automated, functioning like a vending machine that spits out quinoa bowls. Now, do you have any idea what a quinoa bowl is? Do you know what quinoa is? It's Q-U-I-N-O-A. I never heard of it. It sounds... Quinoa. Bowls.
Quinoa.
Oh, that's quinoa. Uh-huh. Again, I've never heard of it. No, I have heard of quinoa. I just need to learn how to read. I looked at it. It looked like a bowl of a granular substance with some vegetables in it and some kale hanging off the side. Anyway, it's a fully automated restaurant. At least the order-taking process is fully automated. Customers order their food at an iPad kiosk, and then hidden behind a wall, the kitchen staff prepares the food, and they never interact human to human. The food is put in a cube. The cube is spun around in the wall. The people grab their quinoa bowl. Quinoa, you say? Why would they spell it that way? Anyway, the entire process, according to the Business Insider, requires no human interaction between customers and workers. The concept, by the way, is not new. The concept of automated restaurants dates back to the early 1900s. Do you folks remember the Horn and Hardart automats? Remember the automats? No, you don't. Because, well, they were founded back in the early 1900s, and they featured a coin-operated machine that dispensed freshly prepared foods. The last automat closed in 1991. And the technology simply wasn't advanced enough. But now the technology is advanced enough that half of the slackers in the Black Lives Matter / Occupy / $15 movement, half of them be put out of a job. Anyway, if your goal in life is to aspire to a minimum wage job, you've been somehow miseducated along the way. And I'm sad for you if that's your aspirational goal to make $15 an hour. Please. And there you have it. So there, Mr. $15 fair wage, living wage. Is $15 an hour even a living wage? I don't even think that's a living wage. Anyway, it's supposed to be, you're like an intern when you're making minimum wage. You're supposed to want to move up. Anyway, for all you youngsters out there, please set your sights a little higher. It's embarrassing to watch you marching in the streets with the angry faces, the big signs, $15, please. All right. Now, we'll move on from the Occupy / Black Lives Matter / $15 movement to, well, someone who's probably marched in one of those parades. From the Daily Mail, a drug dealer was uploading videos onto YouTube, and the videos featured him rapping. He's a rapper. Are you even allowed to call them rappers anymore? I thought rap went out in the 90s. I thought it was hip-hop artists now. Anyway, he was rapping about selling drugs on his videos that he uploaded to YouTube for all the world to see. Let's see. He boasted about selling drugs on his gangsta rap videos. And then he shared them widely on social media. Well, one of the police probably watched the video, or I don't know, maybe his mom turned him in. The police raided his house and found a significant quantity of methadrone, which is a drug that's, for whatever reason, has become popular. It's a drug that I am not on today. No methadrone. Strictly amoxicillin and Advil, which is not acetaminophen, thank you very much. It's ibuprofen. If you care to look into it. So anyway, he uploads the videos, he gets himself arrested, and that's the justice file. The thing is, what do you do to a fellow like this to punish him appropriately? I think a good caning. A nice public caning. Maybe let his mom do the caning. Or let his dad do the caning if you can find his dad. Odds are you cannot. And that's a sad statement in and of itself. Now, I want to get to politics. Let's see, how deep into the show are we? We have to be at least 5 minutes in. Okay, we're more than 5 minutes in, so I am allowed to mention the name of Donald Trump. I will do so at this point. For most shows, they have a 5-second rule. They try to wait at least 5 seconds before mentioning Donald Trump. But we've gone nearly, well, we've gone over 10 minutes here. But Trump has reared his ugly head. I got an email on Friday from a minister. Let's see, what's this fellow's name? We don't want to misidentify everyone. Gallups. What's his first name? Well, I don't know what his first name is because it's not here. Quinoa Gallups. How did I pronounce that? Hold on, I gotta look at that again. Quinoa. It looks like quinoa.
I think it's a quinoa, right?
I think you're right. It is quinoa. Now that I remember the picture, you see, I remember. So we have I don't know the guy's first name. I'm embarrassed. I apologize. We'll just call him Pastor Gallups. And WorldNet Daily insists he's a well-known pastor. When he somehow had my email address. So he sent me a copy of his article because he was so proud that it was published in WorldNet Daily that he sent it out to all his friends and some complete strangers. And, well, his article is headlined "The Evangelical's Case for Trump." Yes, "The Evangelical's Case for Trump." Pastor Gallups says that Trump's advocacy for immigration control should be a top concern of Christians. Why? Well, he says the Islamic State and the danger therein should not be understated. The Islamic State is coming to get us, and therefore we need to elect a man like Donald Trump, says Pastor Gallups, whose first name I'm continuing to scan for even as I speak, and I cannot find it. Maybe it's Jeff. No, we'll go with Pastor Gallups. All right. So he argued that it takes a strong commander-in-chief, you see, to protect Christians against a threat like the Islamic State. And then he really gets down to business here. This is equivocation 101. This is self-justification 102. Pastor Gallup says, Christians say, well, I'm voting for the lesser of two evils. Well, yes, you are, says Pastor Gallups. Yes, you are. But you always have and you always will until Jesus returns. If you don't vote, or if you vote for a third party which will not and cannot win, then you have literally, actually voted for the greater of the two evils, he says. And you end up helping the very thing that you are standing against. Gallups, according to WorldNet Daily, urged Christians to understand living in a fallen world means making tough choices, and unfortunately, he says, it isn't clean or simple. He says, we can't live on a hill with a white robe and a halo over our head saying, I'm going to be separate from it all. That's Pastor Gallups. I believe he's a minister. Isn't there a verse in the Bible? Isn't it it's in the New Testament, 2 Corinthians. Be ye separate. Huh? Come out from among them, Pastor Gallup, I think. Maybe I'm misreading the implication there from the Apostle Paul, and maybe I should listen to Pastor Gallups, who insists, now listen to this, he says, who do you work for, Mr. Christian, Mr. Self-Righteous, with your halo, your white robe? Who do you work for? Are your bosses all in line with your views? Why don't you quit? Why don't you vote your conscience? So, Pastor Gallups, I can answer that. It's because I have an obligation to take care of my wife and family, and therefore I have to work in a fallen, evil, and wicked world. But that doesn't mean I have to become evil and wicked along with the fallen, evil, and wicked people I work with and for. And I certainly would not work in an industry that does something that's... I wouldn't work in the pornography industry or the abortion industry or the hip-hop industry. But yes, we all work in a fallen world, and I'm not going to quit my job, and I don't feel the least bit guilty about it, Mr. Gallups. Anyway, I rebuked... Oh, wait a second. Is there more? Is there more? He says, don't be self-righteous. We live in Babylon. We as Christians need to get some breathing room. I'm so scared of ISIS, I'm going to vote for Donald Trump. And you should be too. Okay, so he says we live in Babylon. He might live in Babylon. I live amongst the Babylonians, but this is not my home, Mr. Gallups, Pastor. My home is elsewhere, and therefore I will not participate in the kabuki theater of electing one of the two major parties. I will not participate. I will throw away my vote on a third party who cannot and will not win. I sent Mr. Gallups an email back. I read his article and I rebuked him. I said, "You, sir, are a fool. You should not be encouraging Christians to vote for a godless, abortionist, homosexualist like Donald Trump." And then he responded to me this morning, or maybe last night, and he wished me blessings. Blessings, blessings to you. I'm sorry we disagree. And so I rebuked him again, even harder this time. I rebuked him even harder. And then he responded this afternoon when I got home from Denver Bible Church. He put my address, my email address, in his spam folder so that I can no longer contact him. So he exercising his right to be an electronic coward, as if I'm going to hound this guy with emails, right? Like I'm going to be all over this guy for the rest of the week, just pushing it, condemning him, rebuking him. No, Pastor Gallups, I rebuked you. I'm finished with you. You're done. So, he's encouraging Christians to vote for a godless, homosexualist, child killer. And he says you should do it for you, to protect you. You need this godless heathen, this laughing stock, egomaniac, quite possibly a nut job. Do it for you because you're scared. Do it. Do it, Mr. Christian. Do it to save your own skin. Gentlemen, we're back. It's the Weekly Worldview. And Mr. Gallup should be proud of himself that he made the broadcast. He'll get a wider audience. And I'm not going to send him a copy because he put me in spam and I don't want the guy to sue me. He's already scared, obviously. Doesn't like a good, healthy Christian rebuke. It scares him. But any of you people out there, if you can figure out who this guy is. Since I can't remember his first name and it's not here in the article, because I edited out some paragraphs that talked about how wonderful he is and what a genius he is. Anyway, he wrote a book called Be Thou Prepared, Equipping the Church for Persecution and Times of Trouble, a book that I probably would heartily agree with in some circles. Anyway, if you people can figure out who Gallups is, Pastor Gallups, please send him a copy of the show, and be ye rebuked, Mr. Gallups. And I want to make sure no one confuses this as an endorsement of Donald Trump. I am not endorsing Donald Trump here on the show today. I want to make that clear. Have I already told the audience that that's my running gag against Rush Limbaugh? At least once a week, Rush Limbaugh has to stop in mid-sentence and say, "Now, this is not an endorsement of Donald Trump. Don't misunderstand me." All right. Anyway, Pastor Gallups is in some odd company. As we go deeper into the politics file, we go to New Delhi, India. The Associated Press reports that around a dozen members of a right-wing Indian Hindu group is asking the Hindu gods to help Donald Trump win. Yes, the Hindus are getting together and shaking dust on one another and putting chalk dots on their foreheads and praying to Vishnu. We have a spokesperson from the Hindu Sena nationalist group. When asked, his name is Vishnu, I'm sorry. The Vishnu Gupta is... You can't make this stuff up. Vishnu Gupta is the founder of the Hindu Sena nationalist group, and when asked about his religious intervention, spiritual intervention on behalf of Donald Trump with the Hindu gods, he is quoted as saying, "The whole world is screaming against Islamic terrorism, and even India is not safe from it. Only Donald Trump can save humanity." Unquote. Joining Pastor Gallup's in their desperate desire to save their own skin. So scared are they of being hurt or killed or threatened that they would completely throw out any thought of morality or godlessness in leadership in order to vote for the guy who they think can save their skin. And that is the description of a coward. There you go. I should just leave it aside because I could just go on and on about this. I don't want to offend all you Trump supporters in the audience, as if that was possible. Trump supporters cannot be offended because they've made up their mind, and no matter what you say, they may end up disliking you, but they personally, they're not offended. They're a lot like Donald himself. He can't be offended, and he has never asked God for forgiveness or said he was sorry to God. Might I remind you, my Christian brethren, that Donald Trump said publicly he has never asked God for forgiveness, okay? There. I know you say, Doug, well, is that a qualification to be the president? Well, the thing is, he says he's a Christian, okay? If he hadn't said that, I wouldn't bring it up. All right? I mean, this guy here, Vishnu Gupta, he's never asked God for forgiveness. He's, well, at least not the living God. Maybe he's asked Vishnu for more arms, or I don't know what they asked for. More arms. I don't want to come back as a lobster. I don't know. What do you ask, Vishnu? More arms. But I'm not going to throw that in this guy's face because he doesn't claim to be a Christian. Trump does. And, well, there you have it. Now, speaking of politics and politicians, it's a very unfortunate and sad situation in the Chelsea Clinton household. That's Chelsea, the daughter of Bubba Bill Jeff and Hillary Clinton. Chelsea's husband has closed his Greek hedge fund. So here's how smart the guy who married Chelsea Clinton is. He signs on with a hedge fund that says, hey, let's bet on Greece. The hedge fund has lost 90% of its value, and it's just time to close the doors. That's Hillary's son-in-law, Mark Mezvinsky. He tried to sell the hedge fund portfolio as an opportunity to bet on Greek economic revival. And Democrats lined up and threw in their money, and now it's all gone. Very similar to donating to the Hillary Clinton campaign. Anyway, how stupid must you be to be a Democrat? Let's bet on Greece. That looks like a good one. It was called, where is it? Where's the name of this fund? This is hilarious. The fund was called the Eagle Vale Hellenic Opportunity Fund. They raised $25 million from hapless, moronic investors, and they've lost 90% of it. He did this with his two former Goldman Sachs colleagues. They opened the Hellenic Fund. And the big bet on Greece, well, it didn't go so well. But don't worry about Chelsea and Mark's child. The child will be okay. I don't think they're worried about where their next meal is coming from because Mr. Mezvinsky doesn't have to give back the commissions, you see, even when he loses. And that's the beauty of being that type of artist. We'll just call him an artist and we'll leave it at that. We'll go from politics into the world of personhood. If you're new to the broadcast, the idea that every living human being is a person legally, it goes way, way, way back, all the way back, all the way back to the beginning. But it's only recently had a resurgence in as America edges closer to having slaughtered our 60 millionth innocent child. Memo to Hitler, Mao, Stalin. You guys have nothing on the Western democratic powers. NATO has slaughtered more innocent children than the Nazis and the communists and the Maoists combined. Just so you know where we're at on this. So because the cry of the innocent blood is becoming louder and louder, there have been a number of movements over the years to try to regain sanity and stop slaughtering innocent people in our neighborhoods and in our midst, because it makes us a coarse and vicious society. And it condemns people's souls to eternal misery and damnation. And so many of us have tried to advocate that the law be restored, giving innocent people their rightful personhood in the womb, out of the womb, wherever. Whether you're in a wheelchair, whether you're in an iron lung, or whether you're in your mother's womb. We think you should have the legal protections of any other person. That's all. And so that's what personhood is all about. And now Rand Paul, according to Right Wing Watch, Rand Paul sent out a fundraising appeal seeking contributions to help a group that he's working with pressure Congress to co-sponsor Rand Paul's Life at Conception Act. I've read the act. I can support it, and I appreciate Mr. Rand Paul sponsoring it. I appreciate the effort. Rand Paul writes in the fundraising letter, the thing that I find distasteful about it is the fundraising aspect. So Rand Paul, instead of risking his political career or even sacrificing his political career for the personhood of the unborn, the innocent millions being slaughtered, instead of that, he's sending out fundraising letters in cahoots with some pro-life group. That's very distasteful to me. Because I would think that if you were a politician with some power and influence, and you felt that you could make a statement that could influence millions of people to the right and to do the right thing, well, that you'd do more than fundraise on it. That's all. Anyway, but Rand Paul writes that the time to grovel before the Supreme Court is over, and he claims his bill could end abortion using the Constitution instead of amending it. And I support that fully. I believe that the United States Constitution already protects every innocent person. It's just that we've decided to acquiesce to the opinion of 9 perverts on the Supreme Court in the 70s that suddenly this is not a person, which is just total insanity. And it's no wonder our society is going insane, because the seeds for the insanity were planted decades ago. When you start denying obvious reality on a regular basis, and then it becomes almost a religious mantra to deny obvious reality, eventually you go crazy. And that's what's happening in our society today. People are going crazy, especially the people who have participated in the slaughter, which is probably 1 out of every 3 Americans has participated in one way or another in the most diabolical, systematic criminal act in human history, the industrialized slaughter of innocent people. And when that many people have participated, that affects your mental health. And they're all going crazy. And that's why we're having what we're having in the cultural meltdown that's happening right now, right before our eyes. And here's an example of that insanity right here. From Columbia, South Carolina, the Associated Press reports that South Carolina senators have rejected legislation aimed at banning abortion. The so-called personhood measure failed after a senator who opposes abortion argued that it would actually damage the anti-abortion cause. That's Senator Chip K. Champson. That sounds like a made-up name. Chip Champson? Would he make that up on the elevator on the way up to the interview? Senator Chip Campson says that personhood is the wrong strategy. He says he believes life begins at conception, but the proposal has no reasonable chance of outlawing abortion. Senator Chip Campson, a lawyer, says a legal challenge to the personhood law, if it were enacted, it could lead to the state's existing limitations on abortion being thrown out by the U.S. Supreme Court. It'd be horrible. They could throw out all the abortion regulations I've fought for so many years. So this is the definition of insanity. He's basically saying, look, if we outlaw abortion, all the rules for killing kids that I've worked on and we've all supported over the years, they could be rendered null and void. Do you people understand that? But, Senator, abortion will be outlawed. Hello. No, I know what he's saying. They think that the court would strike this down, you see, and that would throw us back into the Stone Ages. Well, me, myself, Mr. Campson, if that really is your name, I would like to provoke that confrontation, and let's take that and see where it goes, Chip Campson, all right? Instead of cowering behind your law degree and acting like you're somebody because you've helped write rules on exactly how and when certain innocent people can be butchered, slaughtered, and ripped apart, just because that's where you're at, that doesn't where all the rest of us are at. Some of us are ready to provoke a fight. Back, it's the Weekly Worldview. I am your host, Doug McBurney. So glad to have you with us. I got to take it down a notch because my pipes are starting to burn. All right. We were speaking of the insanity that has been growing within the body politic for many, many decades now. And in Europe, it's led to full-on socio-suicidal pathology within the psyche of the European body politic. I've got a story here from the Daily Mail. The story opens up with just a sob story about a woman in Amsterdam, and she's in pain, and her kids go to school every day, and she works to put dinner on the table, and she has strong values, and she works hard, and she has a close-knit family, and she's sick. And she wants to commit suicide. So they build it all up so you feel sorry for this woman. And they say, by the way, she wants to kill herself. By the way, in Holland, assisted suicide is legal. Last year, over 5,500 Dutch people, including children, were legally killed by lethal injection administered by doctors trained to do the task with efficiency. They're specially trained. So our young sob story mom, Jackie, she wants to die by euthanasia. By the way, she was sexually abused at the age of 5 years old and has developed lifelong depression. Just to tug at your heartstrings one more time to make you feel like it's a good thing that this woman should be allowed to be murdered, basically. Now, with her own consent, but still. Let's see. About a dozen years ago, mom Jackie, she became so ill that she quit her job. She tried to commit suicide by overdosing on pills, but someone saved her. She was taken to a hospital. She became bedridden and told doctors that her life was unbearable. They then agreed to give her the lethal injection after a team of independent consultants ruled that she was competent to make the decision. And the author at the Daily Mail wants to remind us at this point in the story that doctors, Dutch doctors, only carry out this type of killing under strict guidelines. There's a process. Yeah, the process involves submitting a request to a doctor. In turn, he's got to agree with some other doctors. And the doctors have to agree that it's a medically hopeless condition, that there's unbearable suffering, either physically or mentally. And all the doctors have to agree that there must be no hope of improvement. No hope. It's like, are these doctors God? How do they know there's no hope? This woman is depressed because she was abused and her life is a mess. Who are you to say there's no hope? You see, this is the opposite of Christianity. Christianity is based on the idea that in Christ, there is hope no matter what. This is the opposite, which is insanity. The opposite of Christianity is insanity. How about that? Let's see. Oh, I left off on the, I forgot, there are more steps in the process. There's an ethics committee that they get together, they make a decision, and then there's a whole commission, a Dutch euthanasia commission, that monitors the mercy killings. Mercy and killing don't go together. I mean, unless it's a dog or a horse with a broken leg, I mean, then you could call it a mercy killing. But with a people, a mercy killing is called murder. And it's typically one mentally deranged person murdering another mentally deranged person, each one of them consenting to the act. And that is insanity. And that leads to the end, the death of a civilization, which the Dutch, I'm sure, are teetering at the rim of hell right now. Now, I saw an article last week that highlighted the fact that Pfizer, one of the largest pharmaceutical companies in the world, has now restricted access to governments to the drugs used for lethal injections for murderers, rapists, kidnappers, child molesters. Oh, I forgot. We don't execute child molesters anymore. Take that one off the list. Kidnappers. We don't really execute kidnappers. Hold on here. What did I say? Murderers? Yeah. Maybe once in a blue moon in Texas, but anyway. So Pfizer has restricted the sale of their drugs to anyone who would execute a convicted murderer. So my question is, will the big drug companies like Pfizer, will they restrict access to the Dutch Euthanasia Commission? Will they restrict access to their deadly drugs to the doctors in Holland who are going to kill this lady? And the answer, of course, is no, they will not. It's because they're all insane. The whole world is insane, but I am your rock of sanity. I am your rock of sanity and your rock of Christianity, and I am not going to go down that road with these people. All right. No, and neither are you. We are going to be here for one another, the sane people. There are some of us left. The numbers are dwindling day by day, but there are some of us left. Now, do I want to do this or do I want to... Okay, well, let's do this first. So there was a time in a moral society when one had to at least give lip service to religion. Thomas Jefferson is a fine example. Thomas Jefferson was a deist. Thomas Jefferson was not a Christian. He was a humanist. But he had to give lip service to God and Jesus and all of that because, hey, in the society where he was, in the mid to late 1700s in the Americas, if you were not a Christian of some persuasion, you were not going to be elected to office. You were not going to go to the finest universities. You were going to be discriminated against because America was a staunchly Christian nation. And so Jefferson at least paid lip service to the idea. He wrote in the Declaration of Independence that our rights came from our Creator. After all, he was a deist. He wasn't so insane that he didn't think there was a God. He just didn't think, he didn't agree with Christianity. He was not a Christian. But he still had to operate within the zeitgeist of the day. What would you call it? The mores of the time. But now we've gone in less than 300 years, we've gone from Thomas Jefferson to Steve Hill. According to Time magazine, Steve Hill is running for elected office in California. He is an avowed atheist and satanic temple organizer.
Satanic.
Yeah. And not only that, he's not even in the closet with it. He's right out there. I'm a Satanist, yes. I'm an atheist. Hill is a Democrat, surprisingly enough. And he's getting shunned by the Democratic establishment in California, largely because many in the Democratic Party view his beliefs as too extreme. So there's even some sane people left in the Democrat Party, even in California. They're like, wait a minute, you're an atheist and a Satanist? And you're willing to just go out there and say that in front of people? Okay, I don't think we can have that yet. I mean, we're working toward that day diligently. But some in the Democrat Party in California don't think they're quite there yet. Hill says, quote, I am a Satanist. All right. All right, Steve-O. Trying to get people to understand, I don't believe in the devil.
What?
Well, he says he's a Satanist, but I think it's a tongue-in-cheek thing. He says, I don't believe in the devil any more than I believe in God. All of it is stupid. But if I have to tell people I'm the devil to get them to listen, then okay, I'm the devil. All right, so here's a person who's obviously mentally deranged. Unless he worships himself, which is probably the case. Steve Hill, Democrat, atheist, satanic temple organizer, according to Time magazine, also works as a stand-up comedian in Los Angeles. Okay, maybe I've been spoofed here. Maybe, is it possible I've been punked here with a fake story? It's Time magazine. Well, sometimes the news in Time magazine is fake. I'm gonna put this story aside and assume that I've probably fallen victim to a stand-up comedian's attempt to make fun of the Democrat Party or something like that. I'm not sure I even stand. But let's move on, because scientists are reporting that there is life after death. Is. Not there may be, not we think, not we have evidence of. They say there is life after death. This is from The Express in London. A large-scale study of more than 2,000 people confirmed that thoughts do carry on after the heart stops. Now, it had been believed that the brain stopped all activity 30 seconds after the heart had stopped pumping and that awareness ceased at that point as well. But this study from the University of Southampton shows people still experience awareness for up to 3 minutes after they have been pronounced dead. And the Express reminds us that scientists say the brain typically ceases functioning within 20 to 30 seconds after the heart stopping. So here's the thing. Measurable brain activity that you can measure with some device in the hospital or the emergency room, well, that definitely ceases 20 to 30 seconds after the heart stops pumping. The question is, does that mean you're dead? And the answer apparently is not necessarily. And I would posit that the reason for that is that our brain and our heart and our self and our being is not purely physical. We're not just physical entities. Just because all electrical activity in the brain appears to have ceased, that doesn't necessarily mean somebody's dead. And just because somebody's dead, I'll take this one step further, doesn't mean at all that they no longer exist. How about that? Now, these scientists, they're not willing to say that yet, but they are willing to say that there's definitely some form of life after death. And scientists have been studying this for centuries. They have been climbing that mountain, working to figure out, is there life after death? What happens after death? What's on the other side? Is it real? Is it happening? Are people hallucinating? Study after study after interview, and they climb and they climb and they get to the top of the mountain, and the theologian is already sitting there comfortably smoking a pipe and reading the Bible and knowing exactly what's going on with the whole life after death situation. We've been aware of that for quite some time. Now, what we need to do is help these scientists understand that there's life after death for those who believe and who want to live with God. But then there's also existence after death, and that's not going to be as pleasant. This study did not address those topics, and so I'm addressing them for you so that we can be clear on all of those points. Thank you very much. Do I want to do the story? I don't even think I want to do this story. In fact, let's skip that because that's just another redundant example of insanity, and let's go to this story from the end of Civilization File. I referred earlier to the end of Civilization. I'm about to read to you an official milepost, a signpost along the road toward the end of a civilization. This is according to Daily Mail in London. A quarter of 18 to 24-year-old women admit to having someone of the same sex, and a third of all 18 to 24-year-old women confess that they have been attracted to someone outside of their defined sexuality. The new generation of sexual fluidity is upon us, according to researchers. These are people, young women, who think that marriage is irrelevant to their lives, and 45% would consider having a baby without a partner. Now, the article says that they consider marriage relevant, but I think that's a typo, because if they consider marriage relevant, how are they gender fluid? Why almost half of them say they'd have a baby without a partner? A partner, even, for crying out loud. It's kind of hard to have a baby without a partner. I mean, someone else has to be involved. Somebody needs to get to these young kids and tell them, look, you can act like you're gender fluid and all this stuff, but you're still a girl, he's still a boy, and there still needs to be a boy and a girl. No matter how fluid each one of you are, there still has to be if there's going to be a baby. And we would highly suggest that you get married as well. Anyway, the researchers credit high-profile trans women such as Caitlyn Jenner for this new era of sexual fluidity that has come upon the daughters of Western civilization. They also thank celebrities such as Miley Cyrus for encouraging young women to feel open about their encounters we'll just leave that aside. All you have to say is Miley Cyrus, right? Just the mention of the name Miley Cyrus can cause some people to erupt in cold sores. Dr. Tom O'Neill runs a YouTube channel speaking about sex, and he said the survey shows promising results for the future. This is promising to Dr. Tom. He said anything that suggests we are moving away from the traditional societal views to become more accepting of a range of gender and sexual identities is very encouraging. Very encouraging indeed, he says. He says, shifting societal attitudes will help young people to live happier and healthier lives, says Dr. Tom O'Neill. So this is a PhD researcher who thinks that gender fluidity and all that, he thinks this is some great new paradigm that our generation has discovered. And now that we're on the brink of a golden age, now that we've accepted the gender fluid society, and, you know, he should really go back and ask the Greeks how that worked out for them. She's got the jack. She's got the jack. I am your host, Doug McBurney, and the pipes have held out, and I've been handed by my extremely attractive audio engineer article here, Tim Tebow. Tim Tebow is writing a new book. Yes, he's going to write a book called Shaken, Discovering Your True Identity in the Midst of Life's Storms. He will write about maintaining perspective when your dreams do not go as planned.
What do you mean, true identity?
It's... Oh, maybe he's going to come out that he's gender fluid. Is that? Oh, my goodness. If that happens, then the whole world has... That's it. That will be the ultimate signpost, the death knell of Western civilization. Now, I think he's talking about the fact that he was not allowed to be a quarterback in the NFL because he made the other sexual deviants uncomfortable. Yeah. John Elway. Anyway, we'll look forward to it. I read Tim's first book, and I'll read this one too. I'll buy it. I've wondered actually how Mr. Tebow's holding up. Having his football career outrageously stolen from him for no good reason by a bunch of foul-mouthed perverts in the NFL. And he probably won't say that in his book. That probably won't be one of the chapters. How the perverts stole my career. No, he's more mentally well-adjusted than am I. I'm far more jaded, pessimistic, and just generally grouchy than Tim Tebow. All right. So anyway, we'll look forward to that. The name of the book, Shaken. It's scheduled to be released. They don't even say when it's going to be released. I know it. The folks at the Denver Post just wanted to put Tim Tebow in their newspaper so somebody might buy the thing. We only get the paper for the coupons, right? We don't even read the comics around here. No, we don't even read the comics. All right, so we'll put that in the file here. Okay, that way I can put a Tim Tebow link on my show so somebody might click on it. Tim Tebow, guaranteed traffic right there. All right, reason number 1,050 to get or keep your children out of the government schools. Photos of up to 50 Duxbury, Connecticut high school girls in varying stages of undress have been found in a Dropbox online. Authorities say that the students did not have the photos taken of them in an unsuspecting way. Most of the photos appear to be selfies. So this is the state of our daughters, America, at least the daughters that have been sacrificed into the public school. They're taking naked selfies of themselves, and they're all right. School officials say that it's been an embarrassing and sensitive lesson for the students. It's a little embarrassing. Dr. Ben Tantillo, the Duxbury school superintendent, held a press conference. Wow, he actually stood up in front of, I'll hand it to him there. At least he had the nerve to stand up and say something. But then, of course, what he says, quote, "We would hope that our young girls understand that there are other ways to be popular." There are other ways to be popular. We want our kids to be safe, and we want our boys to know that this is not an appropriate way to treat women. And I would ask Mr. Tantillo, how exactly are you going to instill that understanding in your students? How exactly do you intend to do that? When your curriculum teaches them that right and wrong are situational, there's no absolute right and wrong, that they basically evolved from nothing by accident, and that the idea of God has to be kept completely out of their education so that they can receive a well-rounded education. How are you, Mr. Tantillo? I would like you to lay out maybe a couple of bullet points. Give me a quick algorithm how we're going to get from here to there without morality, without God. Police say they have no plans for any criminal charges. They want the matter to be more of a life lesson for students. So this is an ongoing story where adults in the educational and justice establishment are simply unable to charge these kids with crimes. And I think the reason is because deep down in their dark little black hearts, the educators know that they're the guilty party here. And the police know that these children are victims. These children have been victimized by perverted adults. And so the police, initially, their initial reaction is not, I should arrest this kid. And I understand that. It's got to be very hard for a police officer to look at the law that says you can't do this, and it's a felony. And then he looks at a kid who's been victimized by their teachers and their educational establishment and taught that their body is some kind of plaything to be tossed about and to be marked up with tattoos and pierced and shared sexually with whoever walks in the door. So the police know the kid's a victim, and the teachers and the lawyers and the legislators know that they're the guilty ones. And that's why they cannot charge these kids with crimes, because they know they would be condemning themselves. And the last thing any of these people want is to be held accountable for anything. Bunch of perverts. In the Justice File, Washington Post reports of a new growing online problem called sextortion. Have you heard of this one? So I've heard of extortion. Now this is called sextortion. What happens is an online blackmailer can assume the identity of an attractive man or woman, and then after gaining the victim's trust, record footage of the victim in the nude or performing some sort of act, and then threaten to circulate the footage to friends or to post it online unless the victim pays money. This is unbelievable to me that this is... How can someone gain your trust enough that now you're letting them film you in... I can't even comprehend this. I can understand someone gaining my trust, maybe even stealing my money, but they're not going to have video of me. No, that's just not going to happen. But it's happening. It's happening for all of the reasons that I alluded to in reason number 1050 just a few moments ago. But don't worry, ladies and gentlemen, the Justice Department is on the case. They are collaborating to increase awareness, and they're going to develop training for prosecutors on investigating and prosecuting sextortion cases. Nowhere does anyone say, hey, maybe we've got a problem with young people who think it's okay to allow themselves to be filmed in situations like this. Has anybody thought maybe that's a problem? Can I throw that out there right now, folks, that I think that's a problem? Okay. Just for you to consider. Don't want to judge anyone. But I just want, yeah. Okay, now speaking of not judging anyone. Breitbart had a story. This is shocking. There's a writer for Salon.com. Have you heard of this website? It is a homosexualist, abortionist, pervert website. Godless, atheist, leftist, humanist, socialist, all of it. Salon.com. A writer at Salon is named Todd Nickerson, and he has written an article in which the headline includes the term, I am not a monster. And then below that, there's a video article that he posted online in which he admits his love for a 5-year-old girl, and then goes on to talk about why he thinks it's justified. The 3-minute video includes Nickerson describing how he first fell in love with a child he babysat when he was 18. He goes on to explain that he never hurt the girl. He says he never hurt the girl. The video advertises an online forum for pedophiles called Virtuous Pedophiles, with the purpose of educating others on what they call themselves. They call themselves moral pedophiles. Under the Who We Are section of the forum, you find the following statement. Our website is intended to reduce the stigma attached to pedophilia by letting people know that a substantial number of pedophiles do not molest children, and to provide peer support and information about available resources to help virtuous pedophiles remain law-abiding and lead happy, productive lives. These are our stories. And then there's some brief bios of the two founders of the site and their personal stories. Todd Nickerson, writer for Salon.com, still a writer, by the way, comes out as a pedophile, says, look, I have feelings for young girl, five-year-old girls, hasn't lost his job. He says that pedophiles in society must find some sort of middle ground. His video ends with the statement, we love kids, and we want to protect them too, says the admitted pedophile. So now that the homosexualists have marriage, and they pretty much have the bathroom, if they're working on that, that's their next great civil rights struggle. This will be the next, I mean, there might be another bathroom type issue. I mean, they might make NASCAR have 5% transgender drivers. They might win some other superfluous victories. But this is the next a battle line that will be drawn, and it will be pedophilia. And the homosexualists will say that who are we to say that someone who identifies as someone who wants to have sex with a five-year-old, who are we to say they can't identify that? And if you say, if you judge them, aren't you a judgmental, sexist, homophobic, I don't know what you'd say. But they'll figure out how to say it, and they'll figure out how to condemn anyone who would call for the arrest, trial, and upon conviction, the swift and painful execution of anyone who would not only act on these type of perverted feelings for a child, but anyone who would advocate that these type of feelings are anything but criminal should be executed. That's all. All right? I'm not talking about, if you act on it, of course you should be executed. But if you advocate that this type of thing is not criminal, you should be executed if you are convicted of that. Jared Fogle, you remember Jared Fogle over at Subway? Well, his defense attorney is trying to persuade a federal appeals court to shorten his sentence. Mr. Fogle was convicted, let's see here, possession and distribution of child pornography, as well as traveling across state lines to have commercial sex with a minor. That's what he was convicted of. Well, his lawyer went into court and asserted that although Fogle frequently talked and fantasized about having sex with kids, he did not actually do so, and that that's not such a bad thing. So basically the lawyer's saying, look, he talked about it, he fantasized about it, but that should be, you know, that's no reason to give him this long prison sentence. Jared Fogle received dozens of pornographic images on his computer. He was convicted of that. And basically what the lawyer's saying is, look, he didn't actually rape any kids. Can't we let him out of jail? And folks, the fact that a lawyer can make such arguments in open court without fear of being arrested himself says an awful lot about the moral depravity and the state of near insanity that our justice system and our society in general has fallen to. That lawyer should have been arrested for asserting that. For asserting that talking about and fantasizing about that type of thing is not criminal behavior, he should have been arrested for that. That's all. All right. Barack Obama told all the public schools that they have to accommodate transgender students. Yeah. Reuters reports that this raises the likelihood of fights over federal funding. Yes, federal funding. Texas Attorney General says he's going to fight legally. Good for him. While Barack Obama's statement on homosexualizing the bathrooms of the schools across the country, while the guidance carries no legal weight, instead it's a set of specific, tangible, real-world advice and suggestions. Did we mention the federal funds? We just want to suggest, you know, that we're not saying we're going to take away your federal funds. But we do give you lots of federal funds. And so we want to suggest, give you some guidance. Allow the boys and girls to use whatever bathroom they want. Allow them to identify as any sex they want. Just a suggestion. Come on. You want the money, don't you? Take the mark. Come on. You know you want it. Disgusting. Unbelievable. Here at our school, we have a school here, McBurney Compound. We will not be relabeling the bathrooms, nor shall we be seeking federal funds. Thank you very much. Reason number 1057 to keep it, get your kids out of the public schools. Teacher at Cool Springs Elementary in Virginia allegedly forced some second graders to stick their heads in a bucket of urine. You see, someone had urinated in a bucket. And so the teacher had every male student smell the urine in the bucket and give their opinion from the smell as to which child urinated in the bucket. Well, the school responded. They sent home a note warning that the children may have been exposed to bodily fluids in the classroom. The teacher, by the way, has been on the job for 26 years and is still on the job. Yep. One hapless mother says, I don't think this is appropriate. This lady is in there teaching my son. I don't understand how they let her come back. I don't get it. Hapless, stupid mother. Another hapless dad says the school has given him the option of moving his son to another class, but he says he feels that would be punishing the wrong person. I want to continue punishing my child by sending him into the government schools. Get or keep your kids out of the government schools, or their sanity will be sacrificed on the altar of, I don't know what. It's an altar to nothingness, to emptiness, to self-absorption, and to narcissism, I suppose. All right. Barry Obama. CNN reports General Raymond Thomas, who's obviously suspect because he has survived the Obama purge. He's in the command of taking command of the special operations there in the Defense Department. He says that, they report that now where Obama is increasingly calling upon special operations forces to carry out so-called small wars across the Middle East and Africa to challenge ISIS and Al-Qaeda. The general says we're attempting to identify opportunities to expand special operations, global presence, forward access, and relationships to leverage opportunities short of crisis. You know what that means? Let me boil that down for you. That means in Somalia, there are 50 U.S. troops. In West Africa, there are 300 in Cameroon. In Yemen, there's a small number of U.S. troops that they won't even tell us how many, but it's not many. In Libya, a small number of forces occasionally travel in. And in Syria, 50 troops. Is this opportunity short of crisis? Well, wait until these small cadres of troops are attacked. By the mad warriors of Allah. This is insanity to fight a war this way. Not only are they perverted morally, but they're inept and dangerous and quite possibly treasonous militarily. And I hate to end on that, but, well, that's the way it is. And I will be back, possibly, maybe, if I can. And I hope you'll be here. I want to thank my friends at KGOV and American Right to Life. And at Denver Bible Church, and of course, my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview. Should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you. And may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.